Welcome to New Realities. My name is Alan Steinfeld, and this program is about the evolution of consciousness. We are in a way, a countdown to a huge evolutionary shift that I think is going to be happening towards the end of this year, what the Mayans predicted, what many people have predicted about 2012. And in this age of awakening, so much lost knowledge, secret knowledge, hidden knowledge, shall I say, is coming to the surface to wake humanity up to who we really are. And who we really are is something that transcends the material realm, that is about the pure essence of our spirit. And with that, tonight, we have an unusual perspective about the human spirit and its interactions with the environment and with other creatures that we are here to cohabitate with in a friendly, peaceful way. I have back on the show is Kiwani Lapsaritis, who I interviewed years before about his Sasquatch research, and he has a new book out called The Sasquatch People and Their Interdimensional Connection. Welcome, Kiwani, to the show.
Yes. Good evening, Alan. Thank you for having me.
Well, I really enjoyed your book because you go into so much detail about first the overview of consciousness, and then you get really specific about the different types of beings and creatures that are out there, including the some ET. But why don't we just go, in a sense, outline the Sasquatch people and the many different types, including what you call the ancient ones, so people have a overview of what's out there at this point.
Yes, well, there are many different races of beings that we know nothing about, and they are living at the edge of our society. Many of them live underground. Most of them go in and out of portals from other dimensions. How do I know? Because they told me. I'm a social scientist with 4 degrees, and I've lived out of the country for 5 years, and had a tremendous amount of experiences in my travels. I even lived with Indians on the Amazon, where they had the blowguns and poison darts and stuff, and I'd been down there 4 different times. But the I started researching 56 years ago, and September of 1979, an ET and a Sasquatch telepathically spoke with me simultaneously, and it was the shock of my life. I mean, I wasn't afraid. It was just I didn't realize this particular reality. At the time, I was an administrator working for a First Nation urban center, an agency there in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I was working part-time as a hypnotherapist, and I had been lecturing at the Medical College of Wisconsin. So I was very ill-prepared for all of this psychic stuff.
Wait, so you had
very confusing at the time, but I thought, well, I'll never tell anybody about this. No one will believe me anyway, and I thought it was a one-time deal, but it's been ongoing ever since, and they've contacted me in the last 33 years over 1,000 times.
Wait, so let me get this straight. You were working a pretty normal job, I mean, sort of doing your administrative work, and out of the blue, you had a visitation, or was it more telepath? How did you know it was an ET and a Sasquatch, or not just a telepathic imprint?
Well, I was on a farm at the time, and the Sasquatch spoke to me first and told me who he was, the Sasquatch man, and he spoke in a slightly broken English, and so I could tell, you know, I mean, that what he was saying, and then I didn't believe it. I just thought this is a fluke, and it has nothing to do. In other words, it really didn't happen, I thought.
But you were hearing it telepathically, right? You were
right.
It was.
And I looked around, and I didn't see him at all. And so I started walking around, and within a few seconds, this very sophisticated voice came through, and and said, I am a star person, and I also have been watching you for many years, longer than you know or understand right now. And then I'm looking around everywhere, and I thought to myself, I wonder where he is. And he said, oh, well, right now I am in a UFO, as you people call it. And then I realized every time I thought, he was reading my mind. And so I'm looking up, and he told me it was invisible. He was in another dimension at that time. And it was interesting because I never saw the Sasquatch or the ET or the ship, but someone else saw the Sasquatch following me around. And I said, how could you see that when he wasn't there? He says, yes, he was. I could see through him, and he was about 12 feet tall. And he said he was following you everywhere. There was someone was there watching. So I got permission from the Indian family to go back and camp out there, and I started to have one experience after another. The thing is, in the meantime, before I went back and got permission, the following night, someone at night, all of a sudden, this voice woke me up and said, wake up, my friend, we are here. And when I woke up, it was as if I had about 2 cups of espresso. I wasn't groggy or sleepy. I just woke up clear-minded. It was very interesting. And I was facing the wall, and I felt somebody in the room. And I said, oh, no, someone's, you know, broke in and is burglarizing me, and he's being funny and saying, wake up, my friend, you know. Mm-hmm. But when I rolled over, there was a Sasquatch standing there, and I could see right through him. This is right in my bedroom. They've done this hundreds of times since then, and they've done it hundreds of times to other people, too.
So they're interdimensional beings, is what you say in your book. I mean, they're very physical, but they also are hyper-physical.
They have access to other dimensions, 8 different dimensions.
Because in some of the stories you say in your book, they sound like they're, in a way, some of the ones who seemed a little desperate for survival. They were digging roots, and they were, there was some scarcity of food for some of these Sasquatches. So maybe there's levels of spiritual development among the different races of Sasquatch. Is that possible?
Well, I could say yes to that, but they're all very, very spiritual, other than there's a few rogues that do not like us because they've been shot at, wounded. The members of their family have been shot at, and that kind of thing, and they don't want to give up their secret, that is, information about them, because they're threatened. You know, the population of the world has mushroomed, and a lot of the land is being taken over. So now, they'll come to the edge of towns and patches of woods, living in somebody's backyard, and they don't even know they're there.
But it does seem so unbelievable, and I'm not doubting their existence, but that no one has ever captured a live Yeti that the public could see. I mean, I guess go ahead.
Well, I mean, what if they want to capture one of us? Would you like to volunteer and see what they do to you?
No, I think
I'm being facetious. Now, I'm trying to make a point. Yes, they're trying to catch him, but they have psychic ability to read when somebody's coming into an area, especially when they use maps and say, this area looks good, and there's several people focused on that area that are going to go out there with guns or cameras and all this stuff, and unwittingly, on an unconscious level, those researchers are telepathing to the Sasquatch in that area, forewarning them that they're on their way, they're going to be there. So they leave, or else they're on guard, and the people walk around them and look everywhere. No, they're not here. I don't know why, and they're right there all the time. They just don't want anything to do with them.
They're only seen if they want to be seen. In a way, I think what you're describing is they sort of have a psychic radar, and they can feel if a human being is in their presence, and they can just tell. In a way, they can almost smell human beings, I'm sure, miles away.
It is true that I used that term several times as far as a form of psychic radar, and it's true. I mean, apologize for any of this. This happened to me, and I've documented 224 people, experiencers, that two were physicians, one was an attorney, two were college professors, three of them were scientists, and then people from all walks of life. And they keep calling me. People keep calling me. I keep interviewing people. People come down all the way from Canada, 3 days from northern Canada, to come down just to meet me because the book affected their lives and put in perspective what these people were experiencing. Mm-hmm. So I do all I can to counsel people and to help them and put in all this in perspective. About 2.5 years ago, this woman called me, and she had high anxiety, and she was a registered nurse calling me from Colorado, and the Sasquatch were coming into her place, and she was afraid, and she called some other people in some of these Bigfoot centers and stuff, and they told, "Oh, you got to put up cameras," and I said, "No, that isn't what you do. You don't put any cameras up. If you do, they'll go away. They know if you have a camera or not." And she didn't believe me. I told them the telepath. She didn't believe any of that. But she was very friendly, and it took me an hour and a half to calm her down. We talked for 2 hours. And then she called me back 3 weeks later, and she said, "You know, you're right." I said, "What do you mean?" And she said, "About the cameras." She says, "I bought a camera and put it up, and they disappeared. When I took it back down, all of a sudden they were back again." And I said, "Yeah, that's how it works." And I said, "You know, you need to put out food and to telepath to them. They may not telepath back to you because you may not be a good receiver, or it may take a while for them to for you to let go of the fear completely, and so they can tune into you, because it's like they're like biological radios in a sense. That is, they're on a high frequency, and we're on a lower frequency, and those people who have a higher frequency can connect with them." So I explained this to the woman, and she started putting food out, but she lives at 9,000 feet, so it all the food was frozen all the time. Uh-huh. And there was snow there, and there were tracks everywhere of you know, all from all different types of Sasquatches. So I said to her, I said, "Look, just ask them to come in and leave fruit and honey or different things on the counter, and tell them to come into the kitchen and help themselves." This is interesting. And she said, "Oh, okay," not knowing what she was doing or expecting. And so 2 nights later, she was up in bed reading, and she heard somebody milling around downstairs, and it kind of freaked her. And she slowly went downstairs and tiptoed around, and nobody in the kitchen. And then she walked into the living room just in time to see a 9 or 10 foot Sasquatch walk right through the wall onto the deck in the back. And this freaked her out all over again, and took her a while to calm down. But after a while, they started talking to her. I think it was around 8 months or something before she finally felt comfortable, and they started talking to her.
And are they still talking to her? Is she still in touch with them?
They've gone. They've gone. To another area, maybe for purposes of food. Now that it's getting cold again, when it does get cold, they go underground. At times, they leave and go on ships, spaceships, to where, I don't know. I could say, I know they move people around. The ships move the Sasquatch around different areas, especially if it becomes overpopulated, and they help them to put them in an area where there's food and where it's safe, because they help each other, these particular ETs, and there's many of them. I've seen 7 different races of ETs over the years, and feel very comfortable with all this. I mean, they're my friends, and I've do work and things for them. I ask them for favors, and they do it for me. Mm-hmm.
I would say you're probably their most visible representative from what I've seen in the field of whatever you want to call it, Bigfoot, Sasquatch, you know, Yetis. I mean, it seems like you are really their spokesperson to the human race in a sense.
That's true. I there's no ego attachment to that. Mm-hmm. However, the other researchers, which I've always limited myself, I stayed very friendly, but they didn't like it at all, and they said that they've told other people, other researchers that were friendly with me, that my research has nothing to do with their research, that they're after an animal, a monster that they got to get. It's
and
ridiculous.
You're saying it's impossible. It's they're never going to get it.
So they don't get it, and that's okay. You know, they can. They should join the Boy Scouts and use their abilities to help in a different area, because they'll never go anywhere. They'll never. Nothing will ever happen. So this is how it is, though. I mean, there are several people like myself, but I'm the one that broke this. In other words. In 1979, I'm a social scientist, and this is the first, I'm the first scientist that came out and told the truth of who they are, and I started lecturing in 1980, and I've been on over 75 different conferences and events that I spoke at, and this is important because there are people, and there are nature people that can tune into nature. And they're very displeased with us. They said we are destroying the planet, and that we're poor stewards of the planet. And they, a lot of them, just do not like us at all. But they don't hurt us. Now they choose. This is what I was told. What they call the light workers, and people like I'm a master herbalist and a health consultant, and. I've done a lot of work helping people, and tell me, well, you have a lot of compassion, and that's what real human beings should have, instead of this dog-eat-dog fight to bumper-to-bumper traffic every day, and people get angry and give each other the finger, and they watch violent films and where they're raping women and this kind of thing, and they're disgusted with that, because that's teaching our society that it's okay because it's everywhere. Then they become insensitive to violence. So they only contact people they feel that will help, and that's what I've done. I've devoted my life to the planet, and since they are nature people, they are the stewards of the planet, the real stewards of the planet. I've asked them, and they said, we are the spiritual keepers of Mother Earth. This is our planet. We were here first millions of years ago when the star people brought us. They didn't evolve here. They're not Gigantopithecus the way they claim. That's ridiculous. Gigantopithecus is an ape. It's an anthropoid ape. And
We were brought here, too, as a human species, weren't we, from another place?
That's what they said. Now, I want to say this. You know, I taught anthropology for a short time at a New England college, and I've lectured at medical colleges and things like that. And I asked one in 1985 if he was the. I was just using simpler terms, and I said, "Are you the caveman that science talks about?"
Or Neanderthals, right?
Are you the missing link?
Yeah.
And he chuckled and said, no, you people are the missing link. You don't know where you come from or where you're going. So then I said to him, I said, well, what, you know, then you didn't evolve here? And he said, no, we were brought here by our friends, the star people. They seeded us long before they seeded your people. And when he said that, and that was a curveball. I mean, he might as well have hit me with a hammer, because, I mean, I, for months, milled over this, over and over and over, what he had said. And then a friend of mine, I was living in Oregon at the time, and a friend of mine in Seattle sent me Zachariah Sitchin's book, who's a Middle Eastern scholar and linguist, and yes. Who deciphered, the only one that completely deciphered the Sumerian cuneiforms, that is, if they're like hieroglyphics, you might say, and that it's all described there, the whole thing of, you know, when they talked about the gods, the Sumerians, that came down, they keep visiting them, that was true, but they weren't gods, they only saw them that way, they were the ETs that genetically engineered them. Because the big mystery in anthropology is, how could hunters and gatherers, literally overnight, could build these incredible structures and irrigation ditches and have gardens and all this, you know, the hanging gardens of Babylon and all of these things. Who taught them? Well, nobody taught them. They just kind of caught on. They, you know, somebody, you know, had a real brainer that discovered this. It didn't happen that way. Sorry. They were taught, just like the Mayan people were taught to build their pyramids and everything, and it was done through levitation.
Right, I believe that, and I looked into that on the show as well. I mean, another species that have been brought here are the whales and the dolphins, I heard, from other planets. But you don't go into them. They're just as psychic and telepathic as I'm sure any of the conscious sentient beings on the planet. But do you go into that at all?
Yeah, when I was snorkeling in about 50 feet of water in Hawaii back in 2005, I was over there for a month, and I was looking down, and all of a sudden I saw way, way down, all of a sudden about 10 dolphins. They were coming from behind me, and I said, wow. And I could feel my body change with I won't say shock, but, you know, it's interesting when you see living things swimming around you that can outswim you and have, you know, a type of sonar and so forth. Yeah. And all of a sudden, I saw something at the corner of my eye floating next to me, and the first thing, even though it's ridiculous, I said, well, it must be a log, and I turned, and just as the 1 foot away, the dolphin turned and looked at me, and then two more dolphins came right beside me to the right, and they both turned and looked at me, and I mean, they weren't swimming. I mean, they were swimming, but they stopped and floated, so they would be right beside me. And so I took pictures of them. I had an underwater camera, and then when I after the pod left, you know, I raised my head and looked around, and the captain of the boat that was there said, "Gee, I can't believe that." I said, "What are you talking about?" He says, "Wild dolphins don't just come up to people." He said, "That's a myth." He said, "It's extremely rare that they would even get near a person." He's at 1 foot away. He said, I don't know why they did it to you. And I told him, I said, well, wild animals walk up to me all the time. If I've had dogs charge me, you know, kind of the Tasmanian devil kind of thing, and run at me, and I just go down on one knee and call them to me. And they'll either be stunned and stop in their tracks, because I'm supposed to run, right? It doesn't work that way. I go towards them, and I call them to me. And they'll either turn and walk back and never bark again, or they'll run up to me and let me hug them. So anyway, I've been doing this my whole life. It's just normal for me.
What, do you think the dolphins were aware of the Sasquatch presence around you?
Yeah, they communicate a lot. And, many years ago, I don't know how far back, but I think it was in the 70s, that a captain of a boat in Alaska was standing there looking in the waters around, and all of a sudden the Sasquatch swam by about 20 miles out.
Wow.
So the ships, the spaceships, they told me this, the ETs have underwater bases in the oceans of the world and in the Great Lakes and probably other places in deep water lakes in Russia or China or someplace. Mm-hmm. So, and they've been here for thousands of years. It's nothing new. It's just that we've been so naive and not conscious enough of what's going on around us. I mean, I look up in the sky all the time. The first thing I do at night when I step out on my porch, when I go in the car, and I'm I've never gotten an accident, but I look up all the time, even off and on when I'm driving. Mm-hmm. So they did a study that came out in Omni magazine back in 1979, where they interviewed 350 people in 25 cities around the United States, and they asked them if they ever looked up. And statistically, it surprised me, not one person said they ever look up.
Well, I look up all the time because I know, I mean, I feel my ET connection. But what's the relationship between ETs and Sasquatches? I mean, and also, if Sasquatches are interdimensional, why do they need to look for food in people's homes?
Hold on, one question at a time.
Okay, sorry. Hold
on to that second question.
There's so many questions come through my mind listening to you talk, so just let's go into the ET.
Yeah, the Sasquatch are terrestrial, extraterrestrials. And the thing is that they don't have technology. They may have some that I'm not aware of, but as far as I know, they're not interested in technology from everything they said and I experienced. But they make reference frequently to their friends, the star people, and they have meetings with them. And they pick them up on ships, and at a great deal of the time, there's Sasquatches that, you know, they help each other, that do the heavy mining work because they're so powerful. I mean, they can flip a car with one arm, I mean, easily. I mean, nothing to it.
But what,
so
what,
they
what's
can lift,
kind of...
I don't know what they're mining, but I told a woman 1,200 miles from here in Southern California, if she went out to a certain area, and I marked it on the map, that she'd have a Sasquatch experience. And I said, but stay away from this area here, and I marked it. I said, because there's spaceships landing there, and there's two Sasquatch working with them, and there'll be ships going back and forth. Well, the woman agreed. She was very friendly and polite and all that, but later she told me she thought I was completely nuts. So, but
she
wanted
to
prove me wrong, and she went out there, and there were spaceships. I mean, over the phone later, she was in, you know, going, oh, my God. I mean, the ships are coming the exact spot that you marked on the map, and they were going back and forth, and, oh, my God, and they were real low. It was obvious that they were spaceships. And she was sitting around a fire, because it was in January, and sitting around a fire, and a Sasquatch came to the edge of her camp. So here, she only spent a Saturday night camping. She was just there a few hours, saw the spaceships and the Sasquatch that came to her. And here, researchers, 20, 30, 40 years, even 50 years, some of them, and they've never seen a Sasquatch or had an experience other than finding a few tracks.
Could it also be that after a Sasquatch dies, that the ET maybe takes up the bones? Could that be why there's not been many bones found of Sasquatches around?
There's not many bones. There's no bones.
Yeah. So
they
what
bury
happens
their
to
dead
the bones?
And they
you think?
Put gigantic boulders on top, so they could never be moved.
But there must have been thousands, or maybe millions, that have lived since you know, millions of years ago. They can't all have boulders on top of them, do they?
Well, yes, because they'll go and find, if one dies and they're not telepathing back to them, they'll go and look for them. A few have been hit by cars.
Oh, and really?
I don't know how they do it, but they quickly remove the bodies, and they have the ability to shield, to cloak themselves. So there's things they can do that, just because they have hair and they're giants and they look, you know, ape-like, that's the people label them, just like they did with Afro-American people. They did it to the Chinese that came here. They labeled the First Nations peoples savages and those kinds of things, while the white Europeans that came here were going through their camp and killing women and children, even, and old people, and then they were labeling Indian savages. There's something wrong with this picture, and they're still doing not exactly that, but they're it's I have to call the racist card kind of thing, because they're being racist towards these evolved beings just because of their looks.
Right. So the Sasquatch are probably more intelligent than most people, more sensitive, more aware, more evolved in general.
Precisely. I mean, they're extremely evolved. And they've told me, I've discussed herbs with them about which herbs to use and so on. And I know herbs from Tibet, from Africa, China, the Amazon. And they're discussing and telling me about herbs on the Amazon. And I'm thinking, that's interesting, but how the hell did he know that? So they're very, very intelligent. And to hear them speak, and especially the older ones that are very, very wise, it's a pleasure. It's an absolute pleasure. It has nothing to do with fear or anything other than it's really special.
Right. So it sounds amazing. So would you say the life of a Sasquatch, are they content, except for the kind of threats they have by human civilizations? What's their like everyday existence like that you can tell?
I really can't answer that fully, and I it would be more speculation. Right. I've asked them stuff about it, and they kind of chuckled and brushed me aside and said, "Well, we can discuss that some other time about what we eat and stuff. That's so trivial to them." They said there's more important things to talk about right now, so let's not discuss this. And a couple of times I tried, and I couldn't break through that. But they told me that sometime soon, in the next, they didn't say exactly, but in a year or two, they are going to take me, and I'd be living with them.
Wow, that's exciting. That's amazing. But let's also get into how many different types. You talk about the ancient ones. Can you talk about who they are in relationship to the Sasquatch?
Well, the ancient ones, I remember referring to them as the Sasquatch, and they said, "We are not Sasquatch, we are the ancient ones." And the ancient ones have human faces. Even the women, are many of them are beautiful, with green eyes, and they'd be very tough competition. Just the face, of course, with Miss America. I'm telling you the truth. So
they have hair though.
Their heads are round like ours. Their arms are in proportion to us, but they have hair all over their bodies, and the women have hair, of course, all over their breasts. But the Sasquatch people have ape-like faces with a conical or sagittal crest in back, where their head comes up kind of torpedo-like. They have long arms down to their knees, and, of course, hair all over their bodies. But don't be fooled. People see them, and, oh, my God, look at that monster kind of thing, and they're not. They are a people, and as long as you're friendly to them, they're friendly to you. The thing is, I'm very friendly, but don't break into my place. Don't camp out on my doorstep. Don't threaten me with anything, because I'm not going to let anyone harm me. Why should I? That'd be ridiculous to let that happen. They're the same way. They're just protecting themselves at times by scaring people out of the area or throwing rocks at them, even though they've never hit anyone that I know of.
Right, so there's the Sasquatch, and then there's the ancient ones, which is a different race. And how many different races of Sasquatch?
Don't know. I mean, they said there's seven different races overall, but there seems to be kind of other beings that resemble them in some respect, like the dog face people. And there was one right here on the property. Right by the portal that's 130 feet from my front door, and I've got a picture of it. You can see a wolf-like face, but they walk upright. And the ancient ones that are here, there's there's Sasquatch in the area, but there's mostly ancient ones right here. And they said he is the keeper of the door, so other unwanted beings won't come through.
Through the portal.
through the portal, because there's other beings on the other side. I mean, in South Carolina a few years ago, and they see them off and on, there was a lizard man. He all of a sudden he was there for several days and or a week or something. All of a sudden, nobody sees him anymore. What happened to him?
Are they coming from another dimension and find themselves in this one, you're saying?
Well, they come through portals.
And where do those portals connect? From this planet to where is the other side of the portal?
I'll find out one of these days. I don't know, other than it's another world on the other side.
But anyway, at least as far as we know, the ancient ones and these different races of Sasquatch are here. But are they interbreeding with each other? Because you've talked about humans and Sasquatch interbreeding.
Okay. First of all, the Yeti, they said, is the least evolved of all of them. Mm-hmm. And there's little ones that are, you know, about 3.5 feet tall, 3.5, 4 feet tall. They've seen them in Mozambique and Southeast Africa. They've seen them in West Africa. The Menahuni are little hairy beings that look like miniature Sasquatches. So, but they're all people. Every one of them are more evolved than we are. So they're all over the planet. And as far as miscegenation, that is interbreeding, I asked Haloti, who is an ancient one. She's right around 35, 36 years old from what she told me. They don't keep track of, you know, entirely of, you know, they don't have birthdays, in other words. So, but she told me when she was born and the time that the white flowers came out, the first white flowers in the trees, and this was down in Oklahoma, and that's when the dogwoods come out in at the end of March.
Okay.
So, anyway, she said each one of them have their own language, even, and that I asked if they interbreeded with the Sasquatch, and she said it's rare, but once in a while that does happen. And a woman named White Song Eagle out of Indiana that wrote a book a couple of years, 2-3 years ago about this, her Taluk, who was her contact, was a Sasquatch, but he was mated up with an ancient one, which surprised her. She told me it had our figure of a body, not the bulky body of a female Sasquatch like you see in the October 20th, 1967 film at Bluff Creek, California. That's a female and bulky, but the others, the ancient ones, are very attractive people, and they have interbred with several of our people, of humans.
And what happens to the offspring
broaden strengthen their gene pool.
Mm. But what happens to the offspring of that interbreeding? Does that they become an ancient one? They go back into their civilization, huh?
Yeah, they just raise them there. Mm-hmm. And now, Haloti said something to me that I still haven't figured out, but you may say, why didn't you ask her more, or this or that? It doesn't work that way. They're busy, and they ask, you know, they spend a little time, and then they disappear. And the next time they come, they may start talking about something else, and I don't get to squeeze in that other question. You know, I kind of forget it. But one of the times I was discussing all this, and she said, before the Ice Age, you were us. Or from us, or something like that.
Oh, so we lost our hair. Is that
no, right? No, she didn't mean it that way.
Oh.
That we were, from what I can see, that their people are humans with a human face. So I don't know. This may sound bizarre to any listeners, but you must understand there's a breeding program going on. Just like we have breeding programs for our wildlife and for fish and everything. So I've never had this confirmed, but maybe we may be across from an ET and them, and the ET simply took out the hair and gave us more of a muscular body rather than.
Oh. Because I think there's a breeding program going on with humans and ETs as well, where they're trying to genetically
splice. Several of them, yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see. So you think possibly we were originally ancient ones that bred with some ET genetics. That's an interesting perspective.
Something like that. Now, again, I'm speculating. They didn't say that, and I haven't had a chance. You know, I'm not thinking of that specifically when you know, when they come, because they just don't sit around, have coffee with me in the morning, and I interrogate them. It doesn't work that way. I've made suggestions to them even, and what they said to me is, Kiwoni, they said, please keep in mind, it is us who are guiding you, not you guiding us. Mm. In other words, they're in control.
But what's it all about that you can that you figure, okay, the ETs are coming back and forth. Obviously, there's something here, and there's some evolutionary leap that's happening, 2012, and these Sasquatches and these ancient ones are going about some major business. I mean, it all seems to be working on some galactic level that's beyond our planet, right? Do you get that?
That's absolutely true. I mean, I'm just getting, you know, tidbits of this, so I can't completely answer your question, and I'm doing it the best I can.
No one knows. Let's just guess. Let's just hypothesize what you think with your, you know, educated opinion.
Yeah, I mean, even a ancient one, and she was absolutely beautiful, approached me and asked me to make love to her. And this was in September of 1989 in Oregon, mm-hmm. and she was so beautiful, but I had just 2 weeks before had a broken engagement, and I was deeply depressed and not interested. And, you know, I mean, it would have been interesting from the standpoint that in having that kind of a closeness and interaction and she said she came through the portal and all this stuff, and
maybe she was trying to heal you or of the emotional thing. You can always give her my number, but maybe she was trying to heal you.
Well, I mean, you know, I jokingly said several times when I was lecturing, I said, well, basically, you know, I should have gone ahead and did it strictly for science.
Yeah.
Of course, that doesn't go over too well with the ladies, but, you know, I'm just...
I like it. I like it.
Yeah,
it's
just
funny.
Throwing out a little humor, but she insisted. And I said, well, I'm busy helping someone right now. I didn't get into the broken engagement. And she said, well, it is nice to help others, but I am lonely, and I like you, and I want you to come up into the mountains here so we can make love and that kind of thing. And she was about 5.5 feet tall. She was young.
Wow.
So, and she already had a 4 foot child, because I was there 9 months before and I found their tracks in the snow. And it was the first time I found little tiny tracks and then smaller ones. You know, I mean, her tracks were smaller, being that she wasn't, I don't know how old she was. She could have been 18 or 20. I really have no clue.
But is it possible for them to be lonely if they're so telepathically connected to each other? I guess they could be, right?
Yeah. Of course, obviously, because she told
me.
Yeah,
I guess so. But let's look at the big picture. I mean, that's an amazing story. But, like, okay, so you're in touch with the ETs. What do you think? And of course, we don't know. But if you could put together some kind of scenario that some evolutionary leap is happening, and, you know, it's time that this knowledge about the Sasquatch came out, and the ET connection and this interdimensional awareness seems like it's building towards something. I think great. I think it's a great thing.
But there's going to be a cleansing first. The Hopis call it the Great Purification, but the Sasquatch call it the Sacred Purification, and that's interesting. They said that there's going to be tremendous upheaval. Now, 2 weeks ago, they said any time now, any day now, between now and the end of the year, it's a 90% chance that World War III would start. Mm. That's not good. But they said that. Later, there's going to be volcanoes going off, and, you know, I don't want to sound like Dr. Doom or anything. I'm just relating what they said. And it does match up to prophecy. But that there's going to be super quakes and super tsunamis and all of this stuff that will slowly, you know, weed out people and diminish the population. So, and it will end in a pole flip.
A pole, a magnetic pole flip, or an actual flip of the planet itself?
Don't know. Don't know. I think the planet itself, but I don't know. I shouldn't say, because I really don't know.
No. I guess no one really knows, but it's interesting. So when you get this telepathic information, are they in the presence, or is it all unseen? Or are they standing there?
Most of the time it's unseen, though I can see through them at times when they stand, here in my cabin. They're going to other contactees as well. So some of this information was told to other contactees besides myself, being the researcher in this. From these experiencers, I piece it all together and just whatever they tell me, I say, you know, I share that information.
So, I mean, their culture, their Sasquatch culture, has a long history. And do they ever relay some of the developments in their history to you?
Because they said this is a time of knowing that in time, they said, sometime real soon, a lot of the mysteries will be revealed to us. And they want to start with revealing some of it to me. I mean, there's people starting to have more and more contact. In fact, there's a guy that had contact down in right outside of Grants Pass, Oregon, and he says, "I'm the first that this has ever happened to." And somebody told him, "Well, 33 years ago, it started with me, and as a social scientist, and I've already documented all that. It's already he's trying to reinvent the wheel." But I didn't do this for money, fame, or anything, but I like to still keep the record straight, you know.
Right, and you have these letters in the book even, I mean, addressed to Dream Man.
Yeah, the nickname they gave me is Dream Man, and I asked them why, and they said because I'm a visionary ahead of my time.
So are these actual letters?
So they always say Dream Man, and then they talk to me. Once in a while, it comes out Kiwoni, but I'd say 90% of the time, it's Dream Man, that my name that they gave me. And there was some, I can leave a tablet of paper out, and with a flare pen, a dark pen, and not all of them can do this, but they don't write longhand. It looks like a third grader that printed, but what they printed is profound.
Wait, is this what I'm seeing in your book, actual notes?
Yes, that's the actual page of their letter to me, and I've got stacks here. I only put, I think, three in the book, but I've got stacks of this stuff.
Wait, what I'm seeing in the book is the Sasquatch handwritten letter to you.
Yeah, that's all directly from them, from the ancient ones.
Well, they have very nice penmanship, I would say. I mean, it's very, it's neat. I mean, it's interesting. It's very, that's so bizarre that these letters, I mean, it's very high spiritual knowledge.
It's not really bizarre. It's just different.
Yeah,
in a way that we haven't thought of. We think we're the only ones. We're so self-centered, so anthropocentric that, you know, we need a jolt to wake us up because the planet's dying. I mean, 75 to 80% of the fish in the oceans are dying right now. I mean, that's all that's left. And the 71% of the planet is water. What's wrong with us? And the Russians and even us here at the Hanford facility on the Columbia River dumped nuclear waste in. What are they, nuts? They are crazy. All of them are doing
they
that right
to.
Into our environment where we live.
Yeah.
It's awful.
That is the downside of humanity, and I think, you know, what the Sasquatch are telling us, the ancient ones are saying, we have to grow up. We have to respect the planet. That's what you're saying to us.
It's not going to happen. Now, last November, I went to Barnes & Noble, and I was going through the magazine section, and I saw a UFO magazine. And I've had articles written about me and I've and stuff in these magazines, and I just thought, geez, I haven't seen one in a long time. And I glanced at it, and as I was perusing, there was a little short article about a man in July of 1968. I was in India at that time. I'd just come back from the Himalayas investigating the Yeti. And he was in northern Italy driving in an isolated area, and a spaceship landed in broad daylight, and he got out of the car and was watching it. A robot came out and started fixing something outside the ship, and a humanoid being walked behind him, and he saw this man looking at him from the road, and he started telepathing. And the guy, of course, you get confused right away because you start wondering, why is he doing this or that? And, of course, you're talking to him, even though the man finally realized that, the Italian. So they started asking each other questions and stuff, and the E.T. said that he was from another part of the galaxy and all this stuff, and they were just visiting. And the Italian asked him a question, and I forgot what it was, but, you know, some question about planet Earth. And the E.T. said, I would not be so concerned about that. I would be more concerned about what's going to happen in your very near future when you have a pole flip in 80 to 85% of the population of the planet will be gone.
Really? That's what the E.T. told this guy.
That's what the E.T. said. And you know, I guess with flips, there's, I don't know, 300, 400, 500-mile-an-hour winds or something that may flatten everything. I really don't know. I don't know.
Well, it seems if you're near an ocean, I mean, I would think that the best places to be are on mountains because, even though the pole flips, all those oceans just move all over the place. I mean,
well, they told me either underground in a cave or building an underground place, you know, that's a.
Well, there could
you
be
live
an
underground,
ocean.
You know, but.
Don't you think, anyway. I guess that's happened before. I mean, I would think there might be signs of that, but that's the kind of information you're getting as well, you're saying, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing, so it all matches up. And I've read prophecy, I mean, from Nostradamus, Bible prophecy, Edgar Cayce, all of this stuff. The only thing I see that is not consistent is the time frame. Why? Because we have the ability to change the future based on group energy and thought.
Well, that's
so
what I think. If enough of us...
things, or we can just stand there and let the truck hit us, so to speak. So, you know, that's why the time frame changes. And
so
that's the only thing that's inconsistent. But,
well, that's what I feel. If enough of us put positive or higher intention thought out there, we can actually change that destiny, so it might be one of peace and calm instead of what other people have seen. I think that's possible for humanity to shift, and I think 2012, December 21st, 2012, might be that moment where we awaken the collective consciousness to make a huge shift in the field of humanity. This might be what it's all coming down to.
Here's what they said. They said people think that, you know, 1 minute after midnight or something, you know, some horrendous thing is going to happen. Well, they said it's already happening. They told me, they said this, I think 2 years ago. They said it's already happening. It's slowly building up. our DNA is being restructured cosmically. Now, there's a lot of information out right now that talks about this in a different way, and how a lot of animals on this planet, that their DNA changed. And there's studies where they took a insect insectivore, an insect-eating lizard, and put him on an island where there were just a lot of berries and plants and stuff like that, and it absolutely changed. And they checked the DNA and all this stuff. So we are changing, and they said right now, anyone that's, you know, is trying to change and be a better person, they'll get three times the good karma back if they reach out and help others. Those that reach out and do bad things to others and to hurt people, they're getting three times back that karma. And they do talk in terms of karma, because that's one of the laws of the universe. They started talking about karma to me back in 1985.
But if our DNA is changing, and I think it's changing for the better, I think more of our human potential, our empathy, our clarity is coming online, then I think there's hope for the human race to survive.
Well, it is going to survive, because they said they're going to take many of the people to help them to survive, so we don't start with the, you know, for the Stone Age all over again. Mm-hmm. Of course, again, the Stone Age people, the Neanderthals, were just part of their experiment that were dropped off. There is no, absolutely no link anywhere, any missing link going from the Australopithecus, and as it goes on to, through to Homo erectus, Homo Neanderthalus, and so forth, all the way through, there is no missing links. Science has made the link, that link, in a fantasy thing.
But
and
maybe
yet they call it science. It's ridiculous.
No, I know, but they're...
But they have similar DNA, so they say, oh, we come from them. Well, certainly, because the ETs were, again, experimenting genetically, and there's still places on this planet, especially in Outer Mongolia, where the Neanderthals are still living. They're like the Sasquatch. They're psychic, and they know that people will try to harm them, so they stay away from people.
So Neanderthals could be a form of Sasquatch as well.
No, you don't. You could say that in the most loosest.
I know they're totally different races.
I'd rather not go there. It just doesn't.
Okay, but there
right.
was breeding between. They
beings,
have found breeding
it's like
between
saying,
humans.
You know, well, the Chinese are the same as people in Africa. Well, in a right. way they are, but in a way they're not.
Well, no, but it was breeding. They've proven between Neanderthals and Homo sapiens. They've proven that in genetically, we have small percentage of Neanderthal genetics in.
Yeah. So, but it isn't through evolution, it's through genetic engineering.
Right, so you're saying here, we basically don't have any relationship to the apes, but yet we do have similar DNA. It's because the ETs manipulated those genes and infused kind of off-planet genetics into those apes.
I don't want to go any deeper than that, because I don't know anymore, and I do know that, you know, we have some type of genetic connection with chimpanzees. But what that is, we can't make some, start speculating, which they have. Oh, therefore we're, you know, it proves we're from apes because they're the closest and they can do things and do tricks and be almost human. I don't quite understand that, and I'd rather not speculate, because I'd rather talk about what I do know, not what I don't know.
Right. I'll just add in that Zachariah Sitchin showed that at least 2% of our genetics came from somewhere else. Absolutely. It just as if overnight something was implanted into us that had no terrestrial origin. This is what Zachariah Sitchin says. And then we were created out of that. So they may have used the base, and I'm just speculating, the base of these ape-like creatures and planted ET DNA to create who we were. And they may have done earlier experiments with other beings or transplanted them totally. So what you do know is what they tell you pretty much telepathically, right?
Right. I mean, I'd rather talk about other things and get off this a little bit because
we're
just spinning our wheels a little bit, and I don't know anymore, and I think that we should – there's so much more to talk about.
You're right. I would like to talk about this understanding – thank you for getting us on track – this understanding of what it – this kind of – how do you understand interdimensionality, because you talk a lot about
– Well, if people don't like the word interdimensionalism, if they don't like the word psychic – then, or the word paranormal, then they can just exchange it and use the word quantum mechanics, because this is all from mainstream quantum physics.
But can you explain it a little more so we have an understanding of what that means?
Well, I don't know physics, so I can't explain that in the way that maybe you want. I don't know. But what I'm saying is that all this stuff is quantum physics, and this is it's a wide open field for quantum physicists, so that's not my field. So
right.
I can only say what I know. Now, I was taken twice, once by the ETs that took me ahead 16 years into the future, and they told me that they had, I saw a lot and was amazed at how the world had evolved and everything, and that was, they said, this is important, that they taught me. I spent a lot of time there. But as far as I know, when I came back, I asked, well, what was going on? I said, I can't remember. And they said, because they took you back to the same time that you left. And I said, then that's not helpful to me. I don't understand anything. And they said, it's all in your mind, and it will be triggered and released, and you'll remember all of this in time. And then Pashoma in Oklahoma, the chief of the ancient ones there, took me into another dimension. The same thing happened. You know, I didn't get upset or anything. I just asked them. And they said, well, you met him and experienced all this, but for right now, it has to be this way. But it's another time and space. On when you go through these portals.
So are they training you in a sense to be more like them, more?
Yes.
Okay. Is that something you can also teach other people? I mean, how do we
right
access?
Now, it's not for other people. It's only for those that are ready. Mm-hmm. And there's many different things I wanted them to do, and they wouldn't do it. I asked them, I said, because you're not ready.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, now I'm getting ready because I've been working on myself and what they, you know, what they have said to me.
But if other people, I mean, if they want, if they have a sincere wish to contact these beings, star beings or Sasquatch, I mean, can it happen just with that intention?
Say that again, please.
I'm just saying if people have a sincere desire, like sincere, because they're interested and they want to help. Is there something?
If they want to
they
help
can...
the planet, Alan,
yes.
Then the Sasquatch are interested. But they said, "Well, we're not interested in curiosity seekers. There's too much important work to do because they hold the grids together, the electrical grids, electromagnetic grids of the Earth, which is it's like a part of the aura of the Earth." And they work at this because the planet's in danger. I mean, it's dying, and we're still playing the stupid card. At least this is the governments of the world, because of they like to manipulate. But they said the darkness is fading. The light we're holding on to the light, and your prayers will help. And when you meditate and you tune in, You'll raise your spiritual vibrations and be closer to us, and so we can interact better, because some people you can't. And at times, like when I was sick, they said, well, don't worry that you're not getting all the messages because your vibrations are down. You just rest and don't worry about it.
So was that there? Yeah, go ahead.
The ETs took me about 6 weeks ago when my back was, I have a ruptured disc. I was in pain for a long time, you know, I think about 5 or 6 weeks, and I didn't bother them. I was so busy myself with other things, but it was hard getting around. And the ancient ones said, we asked the ETs to come and take you so they could heal you because you're suffering too much. And I thanked them, and 2 days later, I got up in the morning and, you know, I was ready to run a country mile. And it's been good ever since. They took me twice that week and worked on me. And I always say, please don't erase my mind so I'll remember. And I joked with them one time and said, matter of fact, while I'm on the ship, how about taking me for a ride? You know, I'd like to, you know,
did you remember?
A little bit in there. I mean, but they erased my mind. I don't know. As long as I'm healed, that's all that counts.
Well,
I don't know all the reasons. I don't know. I know a lot, but I don't know everything, and I'm still learning.
No, I understand, because when I've had ET type experiences, it's as if you're in an altered state of consciousness, and it takes so much concentration of awareness to maintain a kind of state of awareness in the presence of these beings. That's been my experience. So it takes a lot of inner work, I think, to remember these experiences. And
the Sasquatch and the ancient ones also have a sense of humor. And when my editor was here, she camped out for 3 days and trying to have an experience, but they later told me that so she wasn't ready. So, but we worked on the book, and then of course had food here and stuff. And after dinner, which was in the summertime 2 years ago, we went for a walk on these back roads here. Well, in broad daylight, bears and mountain lion have stepped onto the road. You know, it's that wild where I'm at, and so forth. Now we went for a walk, and she's asking me questions, but we're walking right along, getting my exercise, and all of a sudden, I'm a storyteller, naturally. So when I was teaching college, I would, you know, present a theory or a situation, pardon me, mm-hmm. And then I would often give an example by telling a story so people can relate. The native people do this, but I've been doing it naturally. I'm not trying to copy anybody. So I started to explain some stuff to her, and telling, you know, these stories and the different experiences that I've had. And halfway through the story, two Sasquatch came up behind us on the road, but they were invisible. Mm-hmm. And I stopped, and I told her, I said, can you feel that? And she said, feel what? I said, my whole body's vibrating. They're right here, a few feet behind us. And she looked around, and I said, no, they're invisible. I said, you don't feel them? And she said, no, I don't feel anything. And all of a sudden, we're discussing this, and one of the ancient ones says, never mind us, finish the story.
Oh, that's funny.
They were guarding me and monitoring me, and they were interested in my story, and they could care less if the woman could feel them or not. So, you know, they do that. Another time I was in eastern Tennessee on an expedition, and these people took me out to an area. And all of a sudden, I saw a 6-foot Sasquatch run and leap in midair to go behind a tree, and he dematerialized in midair because they have great springing ability. So I knew there were 4 Sasquatch there. That's what came to me telepathically. Mm. There's 3 kinds of telepathy: verbal telepathy, feeling telepathy, and visual telepathy. And when you're really attuned, you get all 3 at once. Now, we started walking back to the trailhead. This is up in, you know, in Appalachia there. And we're walking along, and I said to them, I said, oh, just a minute. The 2 ladies that brought me out there from that area. And I said, just a minute, I'm going to hoot to them. Now an owl will go hoo 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 hoo, but they do hoo 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 and really bellowish, and so often I've done that and they would hoot back. So I stopped. It was in the daytime, and I hooted, and I'm listening, and the two women busted out laughing, and I turned around and said, "What's going on?" And she said, "They just said, tell Kimoni he can do better than that."
They
that's
said
a little
that.
Humor, sense of humor.
Oh, that's funny. That is funny. I want to ask you, though, about what you said before about maintaining the grid on the planet. And it sounded like the Sasquatch and the Ancient Ones were working very hard to maintain the grid, because there might be some relationship between that and the pole shift. If would you say?
Obviously, because the magnetic field moves 40 miles, between 35 and 40 miles every year going east. So pilots have to get a refresher course once a year so the navigators don't go off course.
Right. So
this is going on right now. It's never, they don't advertise this, but it's going on. So I don't understand a lot about the shift. Right now, they're very busy over the last couple of years, and then there's times that they're there, and they tell me they're there, but they're not answering questions or doing anything.
So you're saying the Sasquatch are very busy in a way.
And the Ancient Ones, they both are. All of these beings are, because the planet's ready to fall apart, and all these things are happening, and this is on a very biological and geological level. I mean, they pick up rocks and stones often because each one has a separate vibrational frequency, and they use it in different areas. They've got to find that certain stone, and they've been seen piling rocks up and stones and things like that. How they use them is a mystery. Again, they don't sit down and divulge every little thing. They just kind of spoon-feed people.
Well, because some people say that the grid itself, the intersecting points, are where portals or matter-antimatter come together, or passageways through other time-space continuums exist. And maybe it's not just the Earth that seems to be shifting, but the whole of our galactic family.
It is, because right now all the planets in our solar system are heating up. I mean, Pluto is still in its orbit going outward now, further away from us, but they can see that it's warming up. All the planets are heating up, and it's coming from the sun. And this happens, and this is affecting us, our DNA and everything, but this happens every so many thousand years. I don't know if it's every 26,000, but it's, anyway, it does happen every so many thousand years, and this is the first time, and I use this word loosely, that modern man is going to experience this. But we're not modern at all. If we're killing our own people, that is, families kill family members, we're starting wars all the time, governments are not taking care of their people, they're too busy gathering materialism, money, and power. So, this is ridiculous. This is not good. These people are not honest in helping the planet. They're too busy, getting the oil out and digging and polluting everything. Everything's polluted. Everything. Do you know that an infant, just out of the womb, when they check the blood and what's in there, there's anywhere from 200 to 250 different chemicals in that child's body, and they haven't even lived yet.
That's awful.
Why? Because it's coming from us, from the carpeting, from draperies, from furniture, from even the wooded furniture and stuff has all these chemicals and stuff in it. I mean, this is where we've gone crazy.
Well, I'm sure it's also affecting the Sasquatch, even though they live in the wilderness. It must be affecting their chemistries.
Sure. And they're angry. They're angry about it. And I don't blame them. We're messing up their home and this planet. And they said if we destroy ourselves, they'll go next, because there won't be much left.
so what can we do? I mean, we've gotten ourselves into quite a mess, but what are the solutions here?
There is none right now. I could speculate. As a crypto anthropologist, I've got a background in mainstream anthropology, but I'm, you know, there's no need to go there because it's just speculation and it's not going to happen. I mean, nobody is stopping this freight train. It's just going and going and going. It's not slowing down. It's speeding up. And our society now, economically and everything, is starting to suffer. And basically, capitalism is a dinosaur because we run out of natural resources. Well, what's left? Well, then we turn into peons, and those with the money and power all of a sudden are over us. So whatever happens, you know, there'll be plagues and things from people dying if we have natural disasters, because there's dead bodies all over the place, and there's not enough people to bury them and so forth, and those people who are rummaging for food, if it gets that bad, will be in contact with disease, and it'll spread. And people will be dying from, you know, typhus and from all kinds of things.
Well, I think there's hope, though, that because we are evolving and changing and becoming more compassionate and open-minded and in a way multidimensional ourselves, I think we can possibly, I mean, not for sure, but possibly avoid a lot of that mess. I mean, that's my hope.
No, we can't, because you don't have the power to do so. You can be a light worker and be on your own between you, God, and them, and that's what I've done. You know, I've got one foot in society and, you know, 51% of me is with them. Why? Because I like them and because I want to see a healthy planet. I'm not against doing anything to anybody or to harming, trying to go against the government or anything. I'm not into any of that. I just believe myself in staying close to God, and I don't belong to any religion, but I pray all day long, off and on. I take time to pray for world peace, the preservation of Mother Earth and the healing of the planet.
Well, that's doing something, and that has an effect. And I think if enough people did that, it would have a tremendous effect, and things can change. I do believe
it'll
it's
only
possible.
Mitigate it. It'll only mitigate it. It won't stop it from happening. We've gone too far. If you don't mm-hmm. believe that, even though it matches up to what the Hopi said, they've already announced, I've got a guess on this, maybe 8 years ago or 10 years ago, that we've already gone through the window of opportunity to stop all this, and we're in to the fourth world now, where it's the great purification and the cleansing of the planet, and to get rid of the village idiots that think that the only thing in this life is materialism and to dominate other people, and it has nothing to do with that.
Well, not everyone thinks that, and I think there's a huge shift, a huge awakening here, and I don't know. I don't know if the future's been decided one way or the other.
No, I'm not saying everyone is thinking that way. I'm saying the majority is. Just like, what is that 15 or 20% that may make it? Those would be the light workers probably from all over the planet, maybe, because they said to me back in the 80s, that there'd be something like a billion or a billion and a half people left if we're lucky, you know, kind of thing. Maybe it'll only be a half a billion. Oh, this is scattered in little groups all over the planet.
I mean,
so I don't know. I mean, it's sounds severe, but again, I don't want to sound like Dr. Doom, and I probably am, but I'm just passing. All I'm doing is stating the prophecies. And I'm stating what the ETs and the Sasquatch and the ancient ones are saying. I don't know any better. They say put away enough food for food, water, medicine, and for 2 years, and to have a safe place. And the only safe places are in the wilderness or underground somewhere. And that's what they said.
Well, other people are doing that. Of course, the Mormons have been doing that for a while. I know people in the Northwest doing that, and I don't know. A lot of us are still in the cities, but do you have any direct contact with these beings right now? Do they want to relay any specific message that you can tap into telepathically to just tell the audience?
No. Everything that I said, like I said, they spoon-feed people. I've shared, and at this point, they have nothing to share, nothing else at this point. See, they told me back in 1994, they said, if we tell you everything, how to have a good life and how to avoid all the challenges in life and all these different things, so and so forth, well, you know, then your karma would become our karma, they said. They said, because you have free will and you've got to judge for yourself and we can't live for you. So we'll only tell you so much, then you've got to make your own decisions based on free will.
Right.
That makes sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And we do have free will. And I think we have free will to change the destiny, even if there's people who predicted certain things that may or may not happen. And that's, I think, where free will is. You know, there's a lot of experiments now in time dimensional travel, and maybe that's a point to go to or reference.
Well, there is time travel. These beings have that, some of these ETs have that ability. Maybe all of them do that come here, because the thing is that there's like a SETI, you know, where they have spending millions and millions of dollars putting these radio waves out into space. It's silly. They've never really done anything. The ETs are already here, and they have been here right along. And those that are coming that don't have regular bases here, dimension hop. They go through portals in space. There's even aquatic portals, they said, where the Loch Ness Monster, that we call it, they said, goes through them, and that's why they can never find them. Mm-hmm. You know, they looked underwater, and they said, geez, there's hardly any fish there. How can something so big and a family of these things ever survive? It's impossible. And I'd been up to Scotland and to the Loch Ness area. And that's why they're not getting them, because they're interdimensional, and they have that ability too. The Black Panther phenomena that's in Hawaii and Germany and Ireland and basically all through Great Britain and many other places, even in Spain. Well, where are they coming from? The biologists say, oh, people are letting them go. Jesus, almost like every other person on your block has a Black Panther. But why aren't these panthers killing people in areas where there's not a lot of food?
You know,
because
I always
they're
thought
from
I
another
had a
dimension
black...
and they're not trying to do that.
Oh, I always felt
so there's
connected.
All these things going on that are changing, and the ETs can come 100 light years if they want, if they can find the right portals, and they can be here, right here, in 2 or 3 or 4 hours or something. Some
right,
of them
so
in a very, very short period of time.
Well, that's why I brought up the idea of time travel, because perhaps there's a split or bifurcation in time where perhaps that was one destiny for the Earth to go into destruction and doom and pole change. And possibly there's another timeline that could be taken where we split off into a more peaceful, harmonious planet.
Again, it's a theory, speculation. I read.
Yeah, it's all speculation.
I've been told and you know, it could happen. I don't know myself. I don't know.
Well, I've interviewed people like David Anderson on this program who've talked about actually being able to manipulate time and time directions, it seems like. So
now we're talking quantum physics, so we're not talking about Sasquatch.
I mean,
directly about the experiences of Sasquatch and what they do and stuff. We're going off on just a little
tangent. Right. No, I'd like
to
get back to Sasquatch, because there's so much to say about them. And they do, of course, include this interdimensionality. But your research with the Sasquatch, I think, is what other people can benefit from understanding and the relationships that.
Right, but I'm not a physicist, so I can't comment anymore because I don't know anything.
No, okay. Well, let's get back to
this. They do, just the fact that they do that. And I've seen them dematerialize in front of me twice. You know, it didn't shock me. I just felt good that I had that experience.
Well, you seem to, this whole thing, the Black Panther phenomenon is very interesting. And some of these dark-faced people, it seems like there's a whole maybe in a way separate universe of odd, strange animals. There's also a picture in your book of these albino deer.
Yeah, but they're terrestrial. They're from here.
They're from here, but
oh yeah, there's even it only takes let's see. William James said it only takes one white crow to prove that all crows are not black.
Right.
So I have a picture taken up in Canada of a white crow because they have white bears. I'm not talking polar bears, but brown bears. Or I'm sorry, black bears that are have a some kind of double recessive where they become white, but they're not polar bears. Anything they're living here in British Columbia. So I mean, this is a phenomena that's apparently is universal because the Sasquatch, there's white, blonde, auburn, black, brown. There's different kinds, and some of them had. One in Russia, a woman, when the Sasquatch type there, walked up to the cabin, it was dark brown, but it had, part of the forearm was white.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like a birthmark or something, you know, but, wow. So anyway, they're like us in the sense that they have these variations.
And there's a particular ones that you are in touch with that have told you their names, right? I mean, they're constant for you.
Right, like there's Andan is from their language. Haloti is from their language. However, they take from us as well if they like names. For example, Haloti's grandmother's name was Sally. And I said, where did she get that name? She said, well, from when the red-bearded people came up the Mississippi years and years ago, that her parents named her Sally because they liked the name. Because they listened in and heard some, the women there that was with them, was Sally, and they liked the name. Another name, they take Indian names. Neshoba was her older brother's name, or her younger brother, I should say, but he was 20 years old. And then her little brother is Beavertail. Then her youngest sister had a Mexican name. So we do the same thing, you know. I mean, different East Indian people and Asian people and so on come to our country, and often they, you know, my name is, Mike Tashima or something, you know, a Japanese name. But they have... choose, you know, English names, you know.
Yeah, you know.
So, again, like I say, that's what these beings are doing.
You know what the other interesting part, you were talking about how they all, a lot of the tribes of Sasquatch come together and have council meetings.
Yes.
Can you go into some of that a little more? Because they must confer about the state of the planet at those meetings and where going.
I'm going to finish up here.
I know it's getting.
But I'm. The ancient ones contacted a woman in Dallas and said, "We want Dream Man here. He needs to come for consul. They're going to have a consul with elders and everything, and they wanted me there. And so I flew down there and drove." For quite a ways, and then went up into the Kiamishi Wilderness in Oklahoma. And they had said to this woman, said, why do you want him? And he said, because he's a dream man, is our is family. He's a part of our family, and we want to take him. And they live underground there. So I arrived, and when I did, 2 days before, Pashoma, the chief, had to go. Now, I'm positive. I didn't get the whole story, but he was taken in a ship, spaceship somewhere, so they didn't have a consul for me to go, so they didn't take me, like they said. So Haloti came every night at 9 o'clock. As soon as I got in the tent, about 8:30, quarter to 9, And this was in May of this year, 2012. And she would sing the whippoorwill song to me. It was absolutely beautiful. They can mimic almost anything. And she would stand there for 10, 15 minutes and sing the song, and I would telepath to her, and I'd lay there in my sleeping bag and listen, and she's right a few feet from my tent. So I said, do you want me, the first night there, I said, do you want me to come out? And I got up, and when I did, she moved around where there were no windows, so I couldn't see her. And I mean, she was just a few feet away, and then when I slowly went back into the sleeping bag, she came around front again in front of the window that I had for air. They can see even through a house, just like we have, heat sensing devices. Well, they have it built right into them. Somehow they evolved with this, and she could see me moving anywhere in that tent, even though it was just black as can be out. So she did this every night because I went for 10 days thinking I was going to be, you know, with them. And they needed something that I have, some knowledge that I have, and they wanted me to sit in on this. So I thought, wow, this is a wonderful opportunity. And, of course, again, it didn't happen. But the last night there, I told her, I'm leaving tomorrow morning, and I don't, because the earth changes, I don't think I'll ever be back here again. And she cried. And yeah. I told her I loved her. And I, of course, I've been saying that to her for years now. But, you know, she tells me she loves me and asks God to bless me and that kind of thing. And she came 6 o'clock in the morning. It was still a little dark out, just slowly, slowly getting light, barely light. And she sang to me again, and she cried some more. And, you know, I said, I love you, and I, you know, always be thinking of you. And she's about 6'3", 6'4". She could be even 6'5", somewhere in there. But, you know, right around 6'4", we'll say. And she's beautiful and long, straight hair all the way down to her waist. So,
and you haven't seen her again, huh?
No, I there's too much going to happen, and they don't want me to travel. They said it's too dangerous to limit your travel. So if I have to do anything at all, I ask them what their opinion is.
I see. So they tell you right away.
Yeah,
well,
oh, yeah.
I mean, you've written an amazing book with beautiful documentation, and I think in a way, because all sentient beings have access to the same consciousness, it seems like anyone who's sincere enough in trying and wanting to help could possibly reach them mentally, telepathically.
Yeah, they have done this to many people in the, that I told to what to do. And a man called me from northern Saskatchewan and said he's had some experiences but no telepathy, and he's wanted to know if, you know, people think you just telepath a little bit and they'll be there. And I'm sorry, they're busy. They don't, you know, just... they're not grazing and eating, sitting around eating leaves or something, or eating a pork chop or some venison or whatever. You know, there are people that are evolved and highly intelligent with all these abilities, and so they're doing some work, and they're not sharing what it is. But you know, I respect you know, what they're doing and the limitations that they've. I have, because I'm not ready apparently for that. But this man told me that he wanted to learn, and I taught him over the phone, and then we talked again about a month later, and still no progress. And then I hadn't heard from him. This was last year. Well, in June he called me up from Ontario. He said him and his wife moved, and they're living in a house way, way in the woods. And he said he started telepathing once they got settled, and the Sasquatch came to him. And the first thing the Sasquatch said is, "So you want to talk to me, do you?" Uh-huh. And they, you know, this is how they are. And so had a brief conversation, and he left. The Sasquatch left. And he said he'd get back to me and let me know if there's any more communication, but you know, you have to want to help. They don't have time to just sit around and chit chat. They're very busy,
right.
Very, very busy.
So there's an actual technique that you can teach people if they truly are sincere to start to telepath with these beings.
Right. I have this in both books, especially, of course, my first book is The Psychic Sasquatch and Their UFO Connection. And the second one is The Sasquatch People and Their Interdimensional Connection, which people can find by going to thesasquatchpeople.com. Sasquatchpeople.com. To purchase the book or to check out my website. If people are having experiences and they want to contact me, they can go to sasquatchpeople@hotmail.com. sasquatchpeople@hotmail.com. And I'm very open to anyone calling me because I help people constantly. I mean, every week I've got one or two people that I have to spend time with. I don't know who they are, other than they're nice, very nice people having experiences. So if anyone wants to call me, my number is 425-844-8409. 425-844-8409. And I'll be happy to help you. And like I said, they can get the book through me directly by calling or going to my website because it'll change your life, the information that's in there. It's the most sophisticated book out there on who they are. And one person read my books and got excited, I mean really excited, went out and bought 5 books on Bigfoot. The person never read one book of the 5. The person started going through the books and found out it's, you know, we're tracking them and a lot of mosquitoes out this time of year and, you know, just silly stuff. And, you know, they just repeat everything else. And, you know, these are good, sincere people, but because they're stalking them, they're driving them away because they want proof. Therefore, they want to exploit them for their own ego gain. And the Sasquatch know that, the ancient ones know that and everything. So they stay clear of these people. You know, they're nice people, most of them. But, you know, again, they're not doing the right thing and they don't believe in what I'm doing. Well, it has nothing to do with belief. It has to do with the 224 people that I documented, plus over 1,000 experiences from them over the last 33 years. That's not proof, empirical proof, that mainstream science wants, but sorry, you know, this is just one of those things, and that if you don't believe it, good for you. I don't care. That's okay, you know. You know, everyone has a different way of expressing themselves and believing in things. And I can only tell you the truth as I know it. And what I do know, I've put in these 2 books. And, of course, I'm having experiences all the time. The last radio show I was on, the person said, so these are loving people. And I said, yes, they're very loving. And one was listening in here, and they said, yes, we are very loving, and kind of giggled, you know. He was a juvenile, you know, a teenager, that there's 2 teenagers that are out here, and I really like them. I really like them.
Well, I think you've done a beautiful job in terms of showing that the Sasquatch connection is one of consciousness, not one of tracking and stalking and trying to find them as a biological experiment. There's something much more evolved going on here that has to do with the fate of who we are as human beings and the planet.
Yes, and they consider our science very primitive because we have to dissect everything, and they're not going to give up any of their people. However, I know because a Sasquatch told a woman a lot of stuff, a little bit of it is in my second book, but that the government has, you know, I don't know how many bodies, but they've got, you know, at least they've got a couple. They may have more. So they already know that they're ETs and everything. And that's why they don't want, you know, they don't want this out.
I mean, it just shows you that the world is much more magical and mysterious than science wants us to think, that it's a dead universe out there, and it's not. It's full of mystery and life itself. So this is hopefully the future that we're moving into, and that's why I like to do this program. So thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us tonight and all the energy you've put into doing this research for this book, The Sasquatch People.
Yes, and keep in mind that we're only seeing roughly about 1% of what's really around us. The rest is interdimensional, and of course, I believe Einstein said that, you know, that this is a situation that is, if we can see it physically, it's real, but all these other real beings and all these other things are around us, but we're not seeing the other 99%. In closing, I would like to quote from my first book to wrap this up.
Yes,
and
thank you.
What I'm saying is that I end my chapter in The Psychic Sasquatch and Their UFO Connection with this quote from a physicist called Lincoln Barnett, and he wrote this book in 1948, and the title of the book is The Universe and Dr. Einstein. And this is what he said back then, and I quote, and to conclude our talk here, I quote, "There seemed to be no process of nature which could not be described in terms of ordinary experience, illustrated by a concrete model or predicted by Newton's amazingly accurate laws of mechanics. But before the turn of the past century, certain deviations from these laws became apparent, and though these deviations were slight, they were of such a fundamental nature that the whole edifice of Newton's machine-like universe began to topple. The certainty that science can explain how things happen began to dim about 20 years ago, and right now it is a question whether scientific man is in touch with reality at all or can ever hope to be." End quote.
So where does that leave us, really? I mean, really out of the loop about the nature of reality, doesn't it?
No. What it does is, and I don't want to sound religious, but it means get close to God, pray, meditate, clear all your emotional baggage, forgive people by starting to forgive people. It's a job, but I did it in order to raise my spiritual vibrations so I can help better help the planet and mix with them. And that's what it's about. And that's where reality begins, by beginning by clearing yourself. And it's like what Dr. Wayne Dyer says, I'm not in competition with anybody. I just want to be a better person today than I was yesterday. And that's what I seek to do. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've made mistakes like everyone else. Probably was a jerk at times somewhere along the line. But you let go of that. Don't beat yourself up over it. And forgive the people that dumped on you. All that emotional stuff, it blocks people. When people say, oh, I hate that, I really don't hate anything. I don't even hate my enemies. In fact, they told me, pray for your enemies. Love your enemies unconditionally. I mean, it sounds like what Jesus Christ said, but I can't help that. This is what they're saying. So
no,
if Jesus Christ said it, well, maybe it is true, and maybe that's what we have to work on. We have to apply this to ourselves and not just read it and talk about it. We have to live it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Alan, for having me on. And God bless you all. And I hope you enjoy the interview.
Oh, I love this kind of stuff. I love the research you've done, and I've been talking to Kawani Lapsaritis, who's what would you call yourself, a Sasquatch?
A cryptoanthropologist, not a cryptozoologist.
Yeah.
If you need a label, I mean, but basically, I'm a social scientist just trying to find this mystery and didn't realize that I would be a part of it.
And well, you are a part of it. And I think that last piece about going within and discovering ourselves of who we really are is the key to the future of the planet. And I think each one of us has to do that. So we
all
can...
the answers are within, not without. It's just like, I don't know how many times, you know, being very intellectual about things myself, the Sasquatch said, Kimoni, get out of your head, back into your heart. Mm. Everything they said is in a heart level. Stay in that heart space. And, you know, it took me a while, and I'm flowing more, and they said to trust. Said, you know, don't focus on fear or negative emotions. It'll pull you down, and you will contract. They use the word contract. Be in your heart space with love and faith and trust, and you will expand out into the universe. You'll start expanding. Your heart will go out almost like a beam. So you'll be directed. You won't have to get intellectual about every little thing. You'll come to a knowing, but you have to work at it.
Mm,
anyway, that's the final message.
That is beautiful, and I'm sure they're beautiful heart beings. So if we do encounter them, there's nothing to fear except to start loving more. And I think we feel the love in their presence. That's what I get, what you've said. So thank you very much for being a guest on New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld. I've been talking to Kawani Lapsaritis. His website is sasquashpeople.com. That's sasquatchpeople.com. This is New Realities. And if you want to reach me, you can go to my website, newrealities.com. You can email me at newrealities@earthlink.net. Thanks for listening. Next week, I have Anita Munjani and her book, Dying to Be Me, a fascinating story about a near-death experience and a spiritual awakening. Look for us next week here on BBS. Thanks for listening. Good night.